Morning, members. I'd like to get the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. We have a couple bills on the agenda today. First, I'd like to move House File 1328. It's being referred to the Rules Committee. It's a bill we passed earlier. It deals with conservation easement stewardship accounts. Ms. Damon from DNR, are you here? You want to come forward, explain the bill? And we've already been through it, but it was laid over before. And I believe, is this amendment to get the bill in the shape we want, the A2?
Yes.
Members, I'd like to move the A2. Ms. Damon, you want to introduce yourself and then explain the amendment?
Okay.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Susan Damon, Land Acquisition Legal Services Manager from the DNR.
Excuse me, Ms. Damon, can you say again what you do at the DNR?
Land Acquisition Legal Services Manager in the Division of Lands and Minerals.
Thank you, Ms. Damon.
Mr. Chair, members, the A2 amendment makes some changes to Section 3 of the bill, which is the transfer of funds to the new accounts for both the DNR and Bowser. The bill as introduced provided that the remaining balances of existing Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriations would be transferred on June 30th. LSOHC staff raised some concerns about that language because we may not have fulfilled all of our acquisition goals with those appropriations for conservation easement acquisition and stewardship. So we worked with LSOHC staff to make some changes to the bill. I can talk about the DNR changes. Instead of transferring the all of the remaining balances, we would transfer the remaining balances of the amounts that were set aside for establishment of conservation easement monitoring and enforcement accounts for only two of the Outdoor Heritage appropriations, and those are the Laws 2011 appropriation. That was a forestry appropriation. We would transfer the remaining balance there. We fulfilled all of our conservation easement acquisition goals with that appropriation. And then the Laws 2012, there was $25,000. Up to $25,000 could be used for establishment of conservation easement monitoring and enforcement accounts on that appropriation. We've also fulfilled our acquisition goals with that appropriation. We have two remaining appropriations. Both were for Native Prairie Bank acquisition and for establishment of conservation easement monitoring and enforcement accounts. In the 2013 appropriation, to date, we've only acquired one conservation easement with the appropriation monies, so we haven't fulfilled all of our accomplishment plan goals, so we would only transfer $14,000 at this point. And as we acquire additional easements with that 2013 appropriation, additional amounts would be transferred to the new stewardship account. And then there's a 2014 appropriation, and in that appropriation, $112,000 was up to $112,000 was for the establishment of conservation easement monitoring and enforcement accounts. To date, we have not acquired any conservation easements with that 2014 appropriation, and so the stewardship amounts would be transferred then upon closing of conservation easement acquisitions from that account. And Bill Penning is with me from Bowser, and he can explain the changes to the Bowser.
Welcome, Mr. Penning. Identify yourself for the record.
Bill Penning, Conservation Easement Section Manager from the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Essentially what Bowser did was follow the same thing that DNR did. We've got 16 different appropriations from 2011 to current that have various up to amounts in there. The money that you see in the A2 amendment is for easements that have already closed. As of today, that money would be transferred right away on June 30th. After that, we'd work with MMB to develop a process to transfer the money each time another easement is closed.
Thank you. Questions to the A2? All those in favor of the A2 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A2 is adopted. To the bill, any questions? Any questions to the bill? Anybody in the audience want to testify for or against the bill? I renew my motion that House File 1328 be passed to the Rules Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The bill is passed out of committee. Members, next we have Representative Torkelson's bill, House File 1781, Clean Water Fund Bill. It's being moved from here to Legacy. We'll give Representative Torkelson a minute. Members and to the audience, our plan is not to be here tomorrow. We are not proposed to be here tomorrow. At this point in time, for those interested, it looks like our bill will get out before the weekend, so folks should be able to see it, and we're hoping members will have it late on Friday is the timing. And then we'll be back next week to review the bill, and we'll meet all next week on our proposed days, and I would imagine those evenings also as we move the bill out. And if I remember correctly, the bill is scheduled to be passed out of this committee at the end of next week. Representative Uglem, you want to move the minutes of March 26th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be honored to do that.
Questions to the minutes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Representative Torkelson, to your House File 1781.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1781 is the Clean Water Fund appropriations for this year. And I would, before we get started, I would just point out a letter that everyone's gotten from the League of Minnesota Cities with a number of organizations that have signed on to it supporting the Clean Water Council's recommendations. The bill is, for the most part, follows the Clean Water Council's recommendations, and we have the chair of the Clean Water, current chair of the Clean Water Council here this morning to walk through the bill for us.
Okay, and Representative Torkelson, I think it would be best, let's walk through the whole bill and then we'll do the amendments. I think that would, is that work for you?
That works for me, Mr. Chair, just fine. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pat Flowers. I'm the current chair of the Clean Water Council. Thank you for your time this morning. As most of you know, the Clean Water Council was established in 2006 to advise the legislature and the governor on the administration and implementation of the Clean Water Legacy Act and Minnesota Statutes 114D. The council's made up of 28 members from a broad array of different interests across the state, both from metro and from rural areas. And it's comprised of people who have not only an interest, but an aptitude and some experience with clean water issues and achieving clean water across the state. The council developed their recommendations over a two-year process that involved actually developing funding principles and priorities first, and then evaluating the programs presented by the agencies based upon those principles and priorities, and then working that through a stakeholder process that was fairly extensive and ongoing throughout the entire budget development process. The letter that you see this morning from the League of Minnesota Cities, many of those signatories are people who were the stakeholders involved in that process, both from the early stages of how are we going to decide what's important through the process of here's the physical dollar values we think should be assigned to these programs and the finalization of what you see in front of you this morning. I'll walk through section by section from sections 2 through sections 9, and then I'll pass it back to Representative Torkelson to continue on. In section 2, we have appropriations for $110.16 million in FY16. And $109.955 million in FY17 from the Clean Water Fund. Minnesota Management and Budget's FY15 forecast indicated that with a 5% reserve, there is $225.202 million to appropriate from the fund. So this particular bill leaves about just a little over $5 million on the bottom line. Section 3, these are appropriations for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The bill has $5.834 million in 16 and $5.832 in 17. Ag will use these funds to monitor pesticides and nitrates, facilitate the implementation of agricultural best management practices, and support research and demonstration projects. The Minnesota Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program isn't quite ready in our minds to be implemented statewide yet. That was a pilot program that MDA was working through, and they're in the final year of that pilot process. And we want to see what the council in particular wants to see what the outcomes are and what the lessons learned are before that's pushed statewide. So that's why our recommendation was what it was. And the bill actually has that reduced even slightly more from the council's recommendations. Funding for a new pilot program is also in Section 3 for perennial and cover crop research. These cropping systems need some development to help protect both surface and groundwater and to increase the efficiency and profitability of Minnesota farmers. In Section 4, these are appropriations for PFA. We have $9.25 million recommended for FY16 and $9.25 million for FY17. These will be for grants and loans to assist local governments with complying with wastewater and stormwater regulations and to assist with problems in unsewered communities. The recommendations you see there, because PFA actually requested slightly less from previous years, the revolving loan program is fully funded and didn't need more money in it to bring it up to a level where they felt funding was needed. In Section 5, appropriations for the Pollution Control Agency are $26.25 million in 16 and $26.248 in FY17 from the Clean Water Fund. PCA uses these funds to monitor surface waters and state watersheds on a 10-year cycle, and we're actually in year 7 of that first 10-year cycle. I'll also be monitoring groundwater, developing lake and stream cleanup and protection plans, enhancing the subsurface treatment system inspections, restoring the St. Louis River, and conducting stormwater research. The recommendation here is to limit the cost of living increases for PCA programs to 4-5% over their FY14-15 levels, and no funding is recommended for the PCA's Clean Water Partnership Program. There's concern that the funding in this program this program overlaps other activities that are taking place, and we don't want to be supplementing traditional sources of funding as required by the Constitution and actually funding a program that's somewhat duplicative. In Section 6, appropriations from the Department of Natural Resources are $8.5 million in 16 and $8.5 million again in 17. DNR monitors groundwater aquifers, streams, and lakes to help identify the most important water quality issues. They also provide important information to sustainably manage water supplies, and they're also collecting color infrared imagery on riparian areas to accelerate the development of the county geologic atlases, support water planning, and different implementation efforts. Section 17 are appropriations for Bowser. They've got $55.08 million in 16 and the same amount in FY17. Bowser provides grants to local units of government to restore and protect lakes, streams, drinking water, and groundwater, implement conservation drainage practices, establish buffers, and increase citizen participation in water projects. They will also accelerate implementation of the One Watershed, One Plan approach, implement Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, collect data on soil erosion, and provide oversight of local projects and evaluate restoration projects. This is, in particular, the one area where the funding principles and priorities had its most important impacts on the overall budget recommendations for this coming year, this coming biennium. This is a 10% increase over what we've recommended in years past for these same projects. These are the projects where we've actually got an opportunity, both in the short run and for the long term, to make significant improvements in water quality, and the council felt like we really needed to have an added focus in this area, much above what's happened in years past. So that's why you see the increase here. The need for this area is extremely high, and the truth is that the funding that we're providing right now is only meeting about 45% of the actual need in this area. Section 8. Appropriations for Minnesota Department of Health are for $4.013 million in FY16 and $3.812 million in FY17. MDH uses these funds to protect drinking water by proactively assessing contaminants of emerging concern, sealing unused wells, and monitoring groundwater for viruses. This bill appropriates 12% of the Clean Water Fund for drinking water protection, and the Minnesota Constitution requires that we do at least 5% of the Clean Water Fund, so we are meeting and exceeding that 5% goal. It also includes funding for two new pilot programs. One involves water reuse. This will be a comprehensive study and some recommendations on how wastewater, treated wastewater from wastewater treatment plants can be reused more constructively, and integrating the groundwater protection strategies into the local water planning process. We're also recommending no funding for MDH's Lake Superior Beach Monitoring Program, and the primary reason for this is that's a very localized process and program. It's not something that's done statewide. In fact, on a statewide basis, many other regions of the state actually fund and deal with this on a local basis without using clean water funds. So we felt like since it wasn't statewide, we wouldn't recommend that it be funded. Then in Section 9, appropriations for Met Council are $1.225 million in 16 and the same amount in FY17. Met Council used these funds to address emerging drinking water supply threats, expand water reuse opportunities, support local water supply projects, and prevent degradation of groundwater. It does include funding for a new pilot program that will be grants to encourage implementation of water reduction strategies and measures to ensure drinking water protection of our drinking water supplies. Representative Harkless.
Thank you, Flowers, for that run-through. Going on with Section 10 of the bill, Section 10 actually outlines some changes in the voting structure of the council. Currently, both the University of Minnesota seat and the Met Council seat are voting members of the council. It's my feeling that these members act much, their role is much more closely related to the agency members of the council, which are non-voting. Both the university and the Met Council do receive appropriations or have received appropriations from the Clean Water Fund. And it gets a little delicate at times having them as voting members. As non-voting members, their voice is still a strong part of council deliberations, and it just kind of cleans up any impression of a conflict of interest. Going on to Section 11, this is DNR language, and I would like to bring up DNR to explain Section 11 of the bill.
Thank you. It looks like Commissioner Meyer is going to come forward. Representative Torkelson and the other members, are the legislative members, was their role changed, or where are they in this role? You didn't mention
there
that.
There are four legislative members of the council, two from each body. They are non-voting members of the council. The council actually operates as a governor's council, so it's in the executive branch of state government. Therefore, it's kind of difficult to have legislators voting on an executive branch council.
Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR. Section 11 contains two technical changes that the department is asking for. The first one just expands the use of funds from 2013 that were used for assessing mercury contamination. We want to allow the use for assessing other contaminants as well. This is IBI, the monitoring money that was appropriate to us. The next change actually is a section that we're looking to amend to provide clarity. These funds were appropriated 2 years ago, I believe, to do advanced shoreland management or shoreland ordinance grants to the counties. Upon discussion with the counties, we were in agreement that we should clarify how this process works so you can see what we're allowing the changes to be used for the funds on 21.30 for the cost of developing and adopting ordinances with advanced shoreland protection standards or implementing advanced shoreland protection standards to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in public lakes, waters, wetlands, and public rivers and streams. The rest of the language just goes on and clarifies how they will be reimbursed. And then the implementation funding projects says that they must meet the advanced shoreland protections and criteria established above. This will just help the administration of these dollars and get us a bigger bang for the buck.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are some cancellations in the bill that have been discussed in committee before. It deals with PFA. There were some funds allocated that they did not use, could not, or didn't need because there are other funds available for TMDL projects. So those cancellations bring money back into the fund that have been allocated, reallocated with the current budgeting process. With that, Mr. Chair, I believe we have gone through the bill, and we're ready, I believe, to take a shot at some amendments.
Representative Ferguson, I think we'll first see if any members of the committee have questions for you or any of the testifiers so far, and then I think we'll actually take, it might make sense to take the testimony. There's a few people have asked to speak, and I think it might make sense for them to speak before the amendments. Any members, questions? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the chair of the council, we've been reading recently that southern Minnesota has virtually no swimmable, fishable water. Do you think when we passed this, was there an expectation that, these precious dollars would be targeted in such a way that we could assure citizens of Minnesota that we were moving toward improvement of water quality? I wonder if you have any comment about what we're hearing about water in southern Minnesota.
Chair Flowers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the short answer to that is yes. I think the when the voters voted on the Legacy Act, they were voting for cleaner water, cleaner water statewide. I think what we've come to understand over the last 5 to 10 years is that the limited amount of money that the funds are going to provide, even though it sounds like a large dollar value, and quite honestly, in my checkbook, it is a big dollar value, the problem is this is a moving target. Clean water is a moving target. The impacts that are happening across the state are constantly changing, and so we're doing a little bit of trying to catch up and at the same time trying to get ahead. And so we are going to be achieving cleaner water. The question is how much cleaner is really the issue. So when you think of it on a regional basis rather than on a statewide basis, there may be the progress may be a little spottier in that sense, but when you aggregate it together and look at it from a statewide basis, we will be making progress. It's just a question of how much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to respond to that a little bit, too. The study that's been quoted most recently about those rivers and streams in far southwestern Minnesota, I've read through it. It really is just an indication of where those streams are today. It doesn't really identify the trends as to whether they're getting better or getting worse. I think PCA is coming up here later. Maybe they can inform us. I know, for instance, the Minnesota River has actually gotten better. The fishery is improving, water quality is improving. It's not as dramatic as we'd like to see, but at least the trend is moving in the right direction. And I also think it's important to remember that if we weren't doing this work with clean water funds and other funds all across the state, it's very possible that instead of getting slightly better, these waters would actually be getting worse. So I think we need to think about the difference between how much worse they could be getting and even small increments of improvement are valuable. So we want to do better, and we hope that we can do better in the future, but this is hard work. It's very challenging. It's a big state with a dynamic climate that makes this work very challenging.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because the council spends a lot of time on this, what strikes me is a story that I heard some time ago about the whole issue of waste and cleanup. And the speaker said, imagine you walk into your kitchen and the faucet is on and the sink is full and the water is flowing over the top of the sink. And what's the first thing you do? And, of course, everybody gets the picture. You run over and you turn off the water. But what the speaker said is what we do is we grab a mop and we start mopping, trying to clean up after. And if we do that, we'll just never, if all we do is try to clean up what keeps spilling over the edge, we'll just never have an impact. And sometimes I worry when I read what's happening to the water in Minnesota that we're doing the mopping up frantically, but until we turn the tap off, what's going into the water, that maybe we don't ever have an impact. And that's what worries me. The Clean Water Council, I'm assuming, probably spends more on this than anyone. I assume that around that table, I've never been on the council, that you always have that as your discussion point. How does the money we invest get us to a better place? And so looking for assurance this morning that conversation actually happens.
Comment, Chair Flowers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that conversation is an ongoing conversation. In fact, the last three council meetings, we have spent considerable time talking with stakeholder groups from across the state, asking them, how do we make better progress? Because there's a little bit of a difficulty with the analogy that's provided, and that is we don't always know exactly where the faucet is. We can see the water coming over. We know there's a source behind it, but we can't always either get to that faucet or know where it's at. And so part of what takes place between the monitoring program that PCA is doing on a statewide basis for the watersheds, some of the information we've been able to glean and learn through the Ag Water Quality Certification pilot project that's still in the process of wrapping up, they're all starting to give us a better feel of where the faucet's at. And so It's kind of a multi-level approach, part of which looks a little bit like mopping up at the edges, because we do have some science that says, you know what, you do these kind of things, these do make improvements. So we can catch a little bit of the stuff that's spilling over the sink, but we've got these kind of known practices that we can put in place that will protect downstream water quality and improve it. And we still got to get at that issue of where's the faucet. And so we've been working with these groups to ask exactly that question. Where are we getting the best outcomes? Where are we not getting the outcomes we want? How can we make better progress? Because the roadmap says 2-7% is maybe all the progress we'll be able to make, for the very reasons that Representative Torkelson was mentioning, that, you know, some things would get worse if we weren't doing what we were doing. So sometimes staying even isn't all that bad, but it's still not really what we want in the long run, and we need to challenge ourselves to do better than that. And so the council's looking at opportunities and options for us to do better than that, and trying to identify what those are so we can get at the faucet.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Next, I have Representative Fabian.
Thank you. Actually, my question is for Mr. Meyer. If he could come down.
Assistant Commissioner Meyer, if you
could
come down.
One real quick question, please. In Section 6. Line 19.22. Through 19.27.
Representative Fabian, which section of the bill?
I'm sorry, Section 11. I'm sorry. Department of Natural Resources, page 19. Okay. I'm just curious, Commissioner Meyer. We're doing some mercury testing in the Rosa River through MPCA, and I'm just curious to know what kind of coordination of efforts do you have with MPCA. In paragraph D, it talks a little bit about cooperation with the commissioner of MPCA. I'm just wondering what kind of cooperation DNR has with MPCA with regards to mercury and other contaminants.
Mr. Meyer, he's
Chairman,
talking about current law.
Yeah.
Representative Fabian, exactly. We coordinate very closely. You'll be hearing from the interagency work group later on about comments on the bill, but we work as an interagency team on all of the clean water funding, and especially when we're looking at biological integrity or testing, making sure that we aren't duplicating our efforts with the PCA, Department of Natural Resources, and the Department of Health, making sure that we're each testing what needs to be tested and providing those results.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, I have Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, Mr. Meyer, you may not want to go too far, please. But I'll ask the question, and I don't know who. I've got a couple of them. Page 21, I see we're striking the word measures, 21.26 and 21.27, and inserting standards. And I just... If that's what's the relevance of that? Are we getting to what MPCA would define as a standard here, water quality standard, or if there is anything that I should or shouldn't be reading into that?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Purcell, I believe the change from measures to standards ties back to the ordinance language that's there. So it's shoreline protection standards. It's just a clarification of terms. It's nothing more than that.
Representative Purcell.
Change recommended from our staff.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so if we were provided any change in definitions that this, how this applies, that it would be not anything drastically different?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Meyer.
No.
Okay.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so my other question is about, and it talked about local government here, and I know
Purcell, some. Which page are you on?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm over on 22. I'm kind of jumping around, Mr. Chair. 21 talks about 21.24 counties and other local units of government adopting shoreline standards, and I know there's townships up in my district that are adopting shoreline standards, kind of what we call taking back the shoreline from the counties. And this, so it says here that, and I'm on now on 22.16 and 17, must be approved by the commissioner. These ordinances, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but is that something brand new that these ordinances have not been heretofore approved by the commissioner, or that's my question. Are we changing anything the townships need to know about?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, my understanding is that shoreline ordinances, once approved by the local unit of government, need to be approved by the DNR. We set the base, and then they can go above it, and we come back and just kind of certify that. So this is just making sure that these changes that would be adopted under this grant program would fall in line with that process. One of the problems that we've had is that there wasn't a lot of interest in this funding. When it first was passed, we sat down with the counties, and they're like, oh, we have our ordinances are where we think they should be. You know, we're trying to figure out how to make this money work for people. So that's what these changes are trying to incorporate, and bringing in the other local unit of government pieces is a piece that we're trying to get at. There's a lot of counties who are at the bar. There's counties who are above that are gold standard counties, and trying to get the counties who are at the bar above. This may or may not be a big enough carrot for them, but we're willing to try that.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one more question, and that counties or townships can adopt standards that are more stringent than the DNRs, but not less stringent. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Meyer.
Representative Purcell, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, and Representative Purcell, Commissioner Meyer, in everything going on in the last few days, I didn't realize you had some changes to this program, because the program wasn't working. As you know, I don't believe any, Commissioner Meyer, has any of the $1 million been spent? Have any counties participated in it?
Mr. Chairman, we have not offered the funds. We have not formalized the program because of concerns we heard when it was first adopted. There was no vehicle to do legacy changes last session, since there was. We're waiting for the Clean Water Bill to come up this year to try to work on this issue.
Commissioner Meyer, I had the A3 amendment. I am not going to offer it, but I intend to offer some kind of an amendment when it gets to legacy, or someone else will. I don't serve on legacy. But for the most part, I was dealing with, and we have a brand new fiscal note that I have to dive into that was on the White Bear Lake, was the first part of that amendment, members and to the audience. So we won't be offering... I won't be offering this amendment, but I'm going to continue to work on, because we do need to do a way to, we have to find a way to put this money on the ground and get it to work, and that's what I was trying to reach out, and I wanted to do it through the SWCDs, and I still think, Representative Torkelson, that might be the right vehicle to get it done. We've got stuff going on our shoreline that we need to give people a carrot to try and fix. So, Representative Purcell, I think you and I are kind of asking some of the same questions. I don't know. So, members, just so you know, the A3 won't be offered.
Mr. Chairman, just on that note, we would
Commissioner
be
Meyer.
Willing to have those discussions with you. That may be a better alternative, get these dollars on the ground. So I think that's something we should evaluate.
Well, and Commissioner Meyer, I just want to offer shoreland owners a chance to do what's right and make it something that will work. And we just continue to have. I know the governor is talking mostly about ag, or he's only been talking about ag, but I'd also like to talk about some lakeshore people that I think would do the right thing if we gave them some incentive, and I'd rather be a little more address some of that. Anything to that point? So, Representative Hansen, did you? No, no. Okay, thank you. Let's see, I have Representative Johnson next on the list. Representative
Thank
Johnson.
You, Mr. Chair. And Representative Torkelson, I'm referring to page 19.3 and 19.4 and then correlating to 18.11 and 12. I see where there used to be a member representing the University of Minnesota or a Minnesota State University. I'm curious, and that the change you're proposing is just to limit it to the University of Minnesota as the non-voting member. I understand that difference, but I'm curious, one, has there ever been a member from a Minnesota State University? And if, and regardless, why not include a Minnesota State representative, Minnesota State University as a possible representative?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson. That seat has been occupied by Deb Spackhammer, still is, but she is retiring from her position. So it's always been a University of Minnesota seat throughout the life of the council. And it was just, frankly, easier to, with the rewrite, to, we had to have an appointing agency, so we picked the University of Minnesota because that seat has been the university seat all along, and we can only have one appointing agency to select the next person to serve in that seat.
So, Representative Johnson, Representative Torkelson is saying that the university could appoint someone from Mankato.
Mr. Chair, we'd be pleased to see that, but I'd be a little bit surprised. And I guess we draw talent from across the state. There's a lot of talent at the University of Minnesota. There's also a lot of talent at the seven state universities, and I guess I would ask you to reconsider that. And, you know, for ease of language, maybe better for drawing best talent is a better driving force for creating the structure of the board. But that's my thank you.
Representative Torkelson, any comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I assure you I have total respect for the Minsky system and the people that work in it. We will see if we can figure out some way to compromise this language so that it's available to anyone who is qualified.
And to that point, Representative Hausman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would just support Representative Johnson's point. I mean, higher education does play a significant role in our state, and that broad interpretation I would think would be worth looking for language to reflect representation on the council.
It, Representative Torkelson, I don't know if Professor Schwackhammer has contacted all of us, but she did, I believe, contact both you and I and let us know, and I'd like the audience and the other members to know that she would, she doesn't support this change. She personally feels that the university should still get a vote. I know where you're coming from, but I wanted to let members know that Professor Schwackhammer, who's done a lot of terrific work in this arena, would like that position to still be voting, which I would imagine, Representative Torkelson, you wish that you had a vote also. Or no, you don't have to make comment if you don't want to.
I would just add, Mr. Chair, that I, you know, received the same communication from Professor Schwackhammer, and she's done a fine job on the council, and I understand her perspective, and we will see what happens in Congress.
Thank you. Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's somewhat on this point, and maybe I, this appears to be a government operations issue. Is this bill going to rules to go back to government operations, or what's the path here? Because having served on that before, you're changing membership on the on a board, and what happens?
Well, Representative Hansen, we can have Representative Torkelson check with the chair of the appropriate committee, but we're actually not changing the membership. The membership is staying the same, I guess, with the, you know, so to that point, Representative Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're removing the science folks, making them non-voting members, changing the amount of voting members, so you're changing the makeup of the board. I'm not surprised we've got, you know, a letter from all the interest groups, because it's the interest groups that are on the board, and now we're removing the University of Minnesota from a voting membership and the Met Council. So It's another case here where this is an actual change. May not seem like one, but it's removing a couple votes, and it's removing the science votes, the non-biased, non-divide-up pie votes from the board.
Okay, thank you. Any additional comments? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had another question. It relates to the ag water certification program, and this is perhaps for the chair of the council, where you referred that because it's a pilot program, but my understanding is that we're receiving a sizable federal grant to support that program. Does our not funding, how does this affect the federal grant, the position taken by the council?
Chair Flowers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd have to defer to Department of Ag to discuss that. I'm not, we, as the council, we know some elements of what was provided by in the recent federal approval of the Ag Water Quality Certification Program, but we've not had a full disclosure of all of those details and how they interrelate.
Why don't we, Representative Johnson, why don't we bring him down? Yeah, please. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Matt Woman. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. In response to your question, Representative, the Department of Agriculture has received a $9 million Regional Conservation Partnership Award. This is a new program through the Federal Farm Bill. There were about 600 applicants nationwide. Minnesota was chosen as one of 100 applicants that USDA funded in this round. The $5 million that's in the governor's budget recommendation would leverage the $9 million federal grant. Without a full $5 million, we would not be able to leverage that federal grant, is my understanding. And so, unfortunately, Representative Torkelson's bill, and we've had conversations about this, does not appropriate the full $5 million for the program.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, am I to understand that we would simply return the money to the federal government and it would go to another state if we proceeded along this path?
Commissioner Warman.
Mr. Chair, members, that's my understanding, is that we would not be able to leverage any of the $9 million, that it's not scalable.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would ask for Representative Torkelson's explanation of the decision making on that. Seems like a questionable choice.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson. Well, it's not entirely clear to me that not giving all the money to this program immediately would actually threaten the federal dollars. We've had some discussions about this, but I haven't seen anything in writing from the federal government that says, Minnesota, you have to put up $5 million this year in order to retain this $9 million grant. The program is still in its formative stages. I do have some reservations about the program and the way it's operating. I'd prefer not to dig into those details right now, but I'm not trying to kill this program. I think it has a lot of very positive things about it, but it's still in its formative stages. They had four pilots. One of them did not work very well. I think we need to have some more explanation as to what the future of this program is, how it's going to be operated. $5 million is a lot of money to commit from this fund. You will note that there is a significant amount of money on the bottom line. That's basically being held in reserve.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then am I hearing you correctly that the idea would be somehow we would appropriate the money? You're thinking that next year would work to leverage the money? And I guess I would ask both Representative Torkelson and the commissioner about would that satisfy the federal government? And then what would that process look like? Can we anticipate doing that in the next year? I guess I'm confused. It seems, you understand my point is, you indicated that you thought we could possibly appropriate the money later to leverage that federal money. Are you thinking next year?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like another response from Mr. Woolman on that. There's a disagreement here, and you know, it makes it difficult to assess what the impact of this is. But this is the grant given to the Department of Agriculture. As I understand it, the Department of Agriculture understands that we need to leverage that money to assure we get it. And you could clarify and respond,
Commissioner Woolman.
Mr. Chair, members, I have a handout on the certification program that I'd be happy to submit for the record. And in the handout is how the program has been funded to date and what are the future investment needs of the program. The $9 million from the federal government is over the next two bienniums. And we need to leverage, we need to have $5 million this biennium and $5 million next biennium to leverage the full $9 million over those two bienniums.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an important issue, it seems to me. We've had testimony in the Ag Committee that there's some great successes with the Ag Water Certification Program, and the federal government has, as you identified, has identified Minnesota as one of very few, if the only state maybe, or one of very few states to proceed with this new funding. You know, it's an opportunity for the state to access federal dollars, always a challenge for Minnesota, and it seems like let's not lose that funding. So I think this issue needs to be resolved.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that the Ag Committee has not reviewed this program this year. I just talked to the chair of the Ag Policy Committee this morning and asked him that specific question. I wish they would. And frankly, the Clean Water Council did recommend $2.5 million funding. I actually cut it back from that because of my concerns about the program. Up to date, I believe the program has signed up 34 farmers at a cost of $3 million.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my apology. It may have been this committee, but I recall a very extensive testimony from a young farmer from Rotse who was involved in the program, and that may have been before this committee. But I think that at least that one case indicated that there was a lot of success, and the farmer was excited about it. He was proud of the accomplishments, and it's moving forward, you know, at least in that case that we heard the testimony on. So that's what I'm basing it on. So, and again, if the federal government is reviewing this, we're competing against a lot of states. They're seeing some value in it. So, again, I think it's an issue that needs resolution.
Commissioner Warman.
Mr. Chair, currently we have 260 farmers who have signed up to participate in the program. In the pilot areas, where the pilot areas represent 3% of the state. 34 of those farmers have been certified. The rest are in the process from application, going through the process of technical and financial assistance, adopting the practices, getting ready to be certified. A total of 14,600 acres have been certified. 104 new conservation practices have been adopted as a result of those 34 farmers being certified. And in our survey of farmers and landowners in the pilot areas, 77% of them have expressed interest in participating in the program. In terms of water quality results, the 104 new conservation practices that have been adopted based on Bowser estimates, will have a reduction of 1.3 million pounds of sediment entering water bodies each year, 2.8 million pounds of soil saved on agricultural acres, a reduction of a little over 1,000 pounds of phosphorus. Our staff have estimated that the practices that have been adopted will reduce nitrate, nitrogen losses on certified acres by 55%. And then in terms of pesticides, all of the farms that have been certified are going above and beyond the pesticide requirements. and are using integrated pest management to assist in pesticide decision-making on their farms. So we believe there has been significant results. In terms of the program, we have spent $3 million on the program, but I think about it like this, that, you know, you don't build a factory today and expect to pay for it tomorrow. You build a factory and you expect results over a life of the program, and that's what we've done. We've built a program here. We've built the infrastructure to implement the program. We had to build a measurement tool that would assess these farms and work with the local units of government to do the implementation. And these sign-ups are the results of the first 8 months of implementing this program.
Commissioner Wollman, if I could ask you, you mentioned $3 million. Is that the state money that's been spent so far, and what's the federal money been put into this program so far?
Currently, Mr. Chair, currently we have $2.9 million that was appropriated for FY 14 and 15. That covered, the state program covered salary and benefits for our five FTEs at the department. It did some administration at the local units of government. On all of the pilot areas, we worked with the local soil water conservation districts to bring in one FTE. We did not want to have an unfunded mandate with the local unit of government to help them and assist them in hiring an FTE on the local level to implement the program. And then there was about $800,000 of that, $3 million was for financial and technical assistance to landowners. And that leveraged a total of $3.6 million in funding. $1.5 million of that was in NRCS producer contracts. We had another $250,000 in technical assistance. This matched the administration for the local units of government. And then we did have a grant from the McKnight Foundation for developing the assessment tool.
Thank you. Representative Tarkelson, did you have something to add?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the goals of this program are great, but I have some serious concern about the amount of money that's being spent per farmer. I have some serious concerns about the plans to roll this program out in a broader area of the state. Eventually, it needs to go statewide to be a truly valuable program that any farmer could apply for. And from the way the money's been spent up to this point, it's hard for me to imagine that there's enough money there with the current spending trend to even begin to go statewide. I've been trying to get more information from the department, more detailed information about their budget plans and their plans to roll this out, and I have not been satisfied the information I've gotten so far. Again, I would reiterate that I'm not trying to kill this program. I'm trying to work with the department to improve it, make it more cost-effective, and so that it could be rolled out eventually statewide.
Well, thank you, Representative Torkelson, and Commissioner Wollman. I appreciate you and the program. I think the program does continue to need to have work on it. Representative Torkelson, I just did real quick division, Commissioner Wollman. You said you actually have 104 conservation practices already on the ground. I'm assuming that in relation to the 34 farms that are completely enrolled. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chair, the 104 conservation practices count on the 34 farms that have been certified.
Right, and I realize there's a lot of work above and beyond just those 34 farms, but when you look at it on paper and take the $6.5 million that have already been spent or allocated for the program, and granted some are, it's being spent as we go, but that actually just on paper right now equates to over $62,000 for every practice. Now, I realize you hopefully have 100 more practices that are on the verge of coming out and being enrolled. But I think Representative Torkelson, you're raising good questions of that we need to know more about the program, Commissioner, and I strongly encourage you to work with Representative Torkelson. And I don't want to misconstrue that each practice costs $62.5, because that's not true. But that's where we're at right now with the money that's spent, and that's the only the practices so far are these 104. And you know, you mentioned a lot of good things that these 34 farmers are doing, but you don't mention that thousands of other farmers are also doing that at no cost, or other programs they're enrolled in. But you know, all the pest management and all that best practices, truthfully, they should all be doing that, and we shouldn't have to spend millions and millions of dollars to get them to do it. So that's probably a little bit of a loaded point. So Commissioner Woman, if you want to reply, and then go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I would just note that we've spent $2.5 million on or $2.9 million in state clean water funds. That has leveraged $1.5 million in EQIP. It's leveraged $250,000 in NRCS technical assistance and $50,000 in a McKnight Foundation grant, non-state funds. And so I'm not sure that that the calculation gets up to that $6 million mark. We may have a discrepancy a little bit on the numbers, but I understand the point that you're trying to drive to, and I would just remind committee members that you don't roll out a program on a pilot basis or on a statewide basis without developing some infrastructure to develop that program first. And so while the number per practice may look high now, over time you should you'll gain more efficiency in the system.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. And I might have miswrote something down, but I thought you said there was 3.6 of federal money. I might have missed something there.
Mr. Chair, I may have misspoke on that. I can get you this handout that we have developed, and you can take a look at it.
We'll use what you just said as the official record, so that you clarified the money spent in the different programs, and you have said it twice now after the first one. So, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to add one more comment. If this program is going to be rolled out statewide, it looks to me like they are planning on utilizing SWCDs to implement the program, and if that's going to happen, it's just another point to emphasize that we need to properly fund our SWCDs. Otherwise, a program like this has no chance of being successful.
Good point. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe I missed this. Representative Torkelson, when did the council complete its recommendation?
Representative.
When did the council complete its recommendation?
Clean Water Council, when did you complete your recommendation? Chairman Flowers.
Thank you. He whispered in my ear, December 1st, Mr. Chair.
December 1st. Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. So on this particular project, I think we were in session when the federal government announced that they had $9 million. So it's an example of what happens with all these boards and commissions, where they do their work and then things happen. There's more initiatives, or there's an opportunity that could be advanced that happens afterwards. And that's where I think the governor's recommendations looked at how do you take advantage of those opportunities that may not have been known or even aware of by the council when they made their recommendations. And I think this is one of those. Representative Torkelson, I may agree with you on some of this. I think that rather than going statewide, they should double down in the watersheds that are there to see if they actually can move the needle on the funding. But I certainly wouldn't want to turn $9 million back. If where does Minnesota's word play in this? If we've signed an agreement or looking at an agreement, it just seems common sense. I know Minnesota often doesn't get its fair share of federal money, but on whether it was RIM WRP or other USDA programs, we've been able to leverage that money. And I know we talk about intent and not trying to do things, but if we actually cut the money, we may be cutting the money, and that's the wonderful thing about accountability. When you're the author, if you cut the money and no more money comes in, that's a consequence. That's real. So I would hope that as this bill moves on, Mr. Chair, I had mentioned to you we were going to move the governor's recommendations. We're not going to do that this time. There's a couple corrections that need to be made there, but I hope that this conversation continues and that the agency, this particular program, we don't be sending money back that could go on the ground and implement water quality practices.
So thank you, Representative Hansen. So for members in the audience and for committee members, the DE1 will not be offered. Representative Torkelson, you've kind of said already you're interested in trying to work to make sure the federal money doesn't get wasted, but if you want to comment again on that, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to respond to Representative Hansen's comments about issues that come up after recommendations have been made. 4 years ago, when AIS was a big issue and we were looking for clean water funds, additional clean water funds during session to fund AIS, I went back to the Clean Water Council, met with them, explained the issue, and they sent a letter to us, to the legislature, recommending that that funding be approved. There's no reason why the department couldn't go back to the Clean Water Council, meet with them. If they can explain the need and verify the need, the council could send a letter to us recommending this additional funding.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Well, it's always a question with the boards and commissions, which is the cart and which is the horse on these issues. I think in other bills that we've had moved forward here, we as a committee have made changes to those recommendations. If the councils are advisory, then the legislature can make those changes. It's interesting who argues what depending on which ones they agree with, depending on which time it is. This is one where we know we have federal money on the table that could implement practices. And with all the concern about water quality, I would hope that we could get those practices implemented.
Thank you. We've got a couple of testifiers, Representative Torkelson. First, Steve Morris from Minnesota Environmental Partnership. Mr. Morris, if you want to come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Pleasure to be here today. Thank you for giving me a little bit of time to share the concerns of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. I'm Steve Morris, Executive Director of the Partnership. We are the state's largest coalition of environmental conservation organizations with 70 organizations representing more than 400,000 Minnesotans. And I want to make a few comments about the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment process and how important citizen involvement and oversight has been in that process. For those of you who were around when the Clean Water Council was first initiated, it was set up in 2006. And it really grew out of a stakeholders process that included business, agriculture, government, local government, and environmental advocates who really put in place the framework for our work under the Federal Clean Water Act to do the TMDLs, now the RAPs, cleanups of our watersheds across the land. When the Legacy Amendment was passed, as you know, the driving force for the public was clean water, with overwhelmingly people who voted yes on the amendment voting for the amendment because they wanted to protect and restore our waters in the state. More people voted for the amendment for that purpose than for all the other single purposes put together. I think 42% of the yes votes attributed it to water. But it's also probably the most intractable issue that we have to deal with to really get our waters restored into the condition we need to do. We at the partnership, along with a number of other partners who are part of the council process, support the council recommendations. We think they're very important that we support that process because the public, not only because of the process they use this year, but because of the public concern for citizen accountability, or accountability of the funds and citizen oversight. During the entire legacy campaign, although water was really the marquee issue, one of the main underlying issues that we used consistently through the campaign in 2008 was there would be citizen oversight, citizen review of the projects, and citizen participation. We think that is a very important reason to support the Clean Water Council recommendations. We think that the council is a multi-sector council. It's not perfect, and you know, we could always make some changes to the process. But this year, they really improved their process and ramped it up, where I think, as Mr. Flowers probably talked about, I wasn't here for his testimony, they set up some clear principles, some priorities. They took input repeatedly in the process, first on their process and then on their recommendations. And since these recommendations were made in December, they've continued to take input and revise that process. We think that, for the long term, is really important for the health and the credibility of the legacy amendment, that that process not be undercut, but it be supported and enhanced and improved as we go forward. We think the council is on a path to do that. They've come a long way, and they're clearly improving and ramping up their game. We think there are a number of good items in the council package. I won't go through all of them in detail, but we particularly like the process of the 10-year monitoring of the waters that's underway in the package, as well as the completion of the WRAPs, the Watershed Restoration and Protection Strategies, that's on a 10-year cycle in order to get cleanup plans, science-based, done on a rotating basis. It's a large, comprehensive package, and what we would say is we don't think it's perfect. If our group sat down and wrote the bill, it would be a little different, quite frankly. But we think it is, on whole, a very good package from a sound process, and it's a solid package. And we'd ask for the committee's support for that package. I will say that we understand things do change. It's been since the conversation we just had, the committee just had, it's been since December 1 since the council made these recommendations. It might be a good opportunity for the council to reconvene and look at some of these other issues. For example, our partnership is fully in support of the governor's buffer initiative. And we know that he's looking to some of these clean water funds to fund implementation of the buffer initiative, moving some things around to make it work, but really keeping the integrity of the package in place. We, for example, think that makes a lot of sense. But overall, we support the council recommendation. We are very disappointed that the council package came forward, and when the governor's budget came out, he made 27 different changes to the council recommendations, and some of them really minor and some of them more significant. We think it makes more sense if there are real differences to be had. We should talk about those big issues, and maybe things have to be tweaked a little bit, just like some years this committee might decide to, they have some priorities that are a little bit different. But we don't think it makes sense to kind of, on a wholesale level, really ignore the process of the council and make all the changes back to the original governor recommendations, even when they're relatively minor changes. We really think that undercuts the credibility of the council. We think it makes it difficult to get citizens involved in the process and to engage in the process, and it makes it difficult for us as advocates. We as MEP do not get any of this money. We do it as a kind of a watchdog function and an advocacy function, but it makes it really difficult for us and our member groups to engage in the process with the citizens and with the council if their recommendations are not given heavy weight. And so we really side with the council and come down and say we ask the committee to support them, understand there may be some adjustments as we go forward, but would also encourage the council to look at new circumstances and perhaps weigh in on the new circumstances and the opportunities that have arisen since the recommendations were made. With that, Mr. Chairman, all I'd say is we request that you use the council, use their process, use their analysis, use their arm's length assessment and judgment, and you don't have the time to go through all of these proposals and all these programs, and so I ask you to use the wisdom that was in these recommendations. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to sit for any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Morris? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Morris, you know, you mentioned about citizens, and in the Outdoor Heritage Council, the appointees are citizens. They're not laned or designated being to represent any specific group. But the Clean Water Council, they are all supposed to be representing groups, and that's a difference.
Right.
And I think it's not quite right to say citizen involvement when you're actually there representing groups rather than Minnesotans. And now we've got an amendment in this bill taking the university and the Met Council out. taken the science out as voting members, so it's just representing specific interest groups. So how do you feel about that, taking the university out of it as a voting member in the Met Council? So it's only special interest groups that are on the Clean Water Council.
Mr. Morris.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we haven't addressed the changes to the council. We would come down in support of the current structure without the changes until we've had a good chance to analyze it and figure out if we'd support some changes. I think you raised some legitimate concerns, Representative Hansen, about the way the council structured, and that I think we could use some more independent entities. And as you recall from 2006, I think you were here when that bill went through the process. Everyone kept kind of piling on these different interests. And I don't think it would hurt to reexamine that and look at that, because I don't think it's perfect. And I know our members don't feel that way, feel it's not perfect. But we think the way to do that is to have a reasoned discussion about the process in the committee, and if there should be changes, make them. And so we're not supporting any changes at this time.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, at least back in 06, we did adopt my amendment to say that you couldn't have lobbyists on there, so there was one model, but this model is being used throughout bills moving in other committees now to, again, write in interests into the decision-making and the distribution of money. And I think that here we are 8-10 years later, and we keep saying, well, it could be improved, but it keeps getting replicated, keeps getting duplicated. And more take it out of the hands out of the elected officials, because apparently we're unable to process this and just adopt whatever the interests come together and put in front of us. And I think, Mr. Chair, you've expressed your concern about that and other bills, but this discussion is going to continue, and it's doesn't matter who's in charge. We just keep having more and more boards and commissions that have people that are they're there for a purpose. They're there to represent an interest rather than to represent Minnesotans, and we have to move away from that.
Thank you. Next, we'd like to hear from the PCA. I believe they're on. Ms. Flood, you want to come forward and okay. Welcome. Members, I believe, Ms. Flood, are you going to talk off the handout we have? Members, we have a handout, Interagency Clean Water Fund Update. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Flood. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I also chair a group that's called the Clean Water Fund Interagency Coordination Team, which is comprised of the 7 state agencies that receive appropriations from the Clean Water Fund. And as the chair pointed out, there is a handout in your package of this presentation and slides that, if you'll just bear with me for a moment, we'll call up on the screen. Thank you.
Members in the audience, we're just working to get it on the overhead so folks can see it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it appears as though they're going to have to restart the computer, so why don't we work off the handouts for the time being and see if they can make this happen while I'm going through
yes,
the presentation.
Go ahead.
Thank you. As I mentioned, the Clean Water Interagency Coordination Team is comprised of the 7 state agencies that are funded from the Clean Water Fund. On page 2, the slide 2, that shows the Minnesota Water Management Framework. It's the governor's recommendations for Clean Water Fund appropriations are based on The 10-year watershed approach as specified in Minnesota Statutes 114D. This includes monitoring and assessing all of the waters of the state within a 10-year time frame. It helps us to then characterize what are the water quality problems, our threats to our water resources. We then develop what are called watershed restoration and protection strategies that identify where those problems are, where those threats are. Those plans and strategies make linkages to local water management plans, and then we conduct ongoing implementation to address those problems and identified needs within each of the 81 major watersheds within the state. On slide three, the fiscal year 16-17 budget recommendations, the governor's recs have been developed using a systematic approach that basically stays the course in order to help us understand our water resources and develop those plans to address the threats to them. It continues the accelerated work of monitoring and assessment and developing those watershed restoration and protection strategies, or RAPs, and as well as respond to new issues. It accelerates on-the-ground protection and restoration for our water resources with a particular focus on non-point source implementation as well as groundwater protection, both within the metropolitan area for groundwater protection as well as in greater Minnesota. You'll see in slide four then a pie chart of the FY 16-17 Clean Water Fund recommendations. The state agencies are recommending, and as a part of the governor's package, $221.69 million be appropriated from the Clean Water Fund to the agencies, and through a coordinated, efficient approach for protecting our water resources to achieve our clean water outcomes. As you can see from this chart, nearly half of the funds go to non-point source protection and restoration implementation activities at $104.1 million, or $109 million. So that's over $32 million more than the current biennium. So the clean water funded agencies also have a focus on implementation and addressing non-point source pollution sources. Our groundwater and drinking water protection is specified in the Constitution to have a minimum of 15% of the appropriated dollars. Here we're recommending 15%, or $33.6 million. Those RAPs, the Watershed Restoration Protection Strategies, 12% of the budget. Water monitoring and assessment, 11%. Point source implementation, 9%. And applied research and tools at $8.4 million, or 4% of the budget. On slide five, you'll see a table which you'll note that overall, the total overall amount of requests really vary very little between House File 1781 and the Clean Water Council's recommendations versus what the governor's recommendations are. However, there are significant differences within each of the funding categories that have significant impacts to particular programs. We certainly recognize the Clean Water Council and respect their work. We as an interagency coordination team work closely with them, and as others have pointed out here, with the governor's recommendations, as Representative Hansen pointed out, things do change, and some of the governor's recommendations are reflective of that. In slide six, you'll see why we think these differences individually matter between programs. As previously mentioned, the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, with the Clean Water Council recommendations of $2.5 million less than the governor's budget recommendations, we're concerned regarding the potential loss of those $9 million in federal funds for that program. As you know, we have a number of different studies and reports that have been released within the last several years that point to What are the predominant sources of both sediment and nitrogen as well as phosphorus, impacts to water quality, and certainly agriculture leads in a lot of those categories. We need to have programs, innovative programs that are recognized that help us address those particular pollutant concerns. There's been a lot of work that's been done on the municipal wastewater side to address pollutant discharges from those types of facilities, and the governor's budget reflects a ramping up of efforts to continue to work with our agricultural partners to try to address pollutant sources from their farms. With $1.6 million less for RAPs in the Clean Water Council budget, the PCA will not be able to meet its obligations to complete that work on a 10-year cycle as required by Minnesota Statute 114D. Also, as a part of your package, you'll see just a two-page note from two pages that are from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. The auditor was conducting an audit of the Pollution Control Agency at this past fall. That one of the findings within that audit was that the agency's other funding sources were paying for more clean water funded activities that actually should be coming out of the Clean Water Fund. So what's reflected in the governor's budget is an adjustment to that to try to address that finding from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Unfortunately, that information was not available to be shared with the Clean Water Council at the time of their budget development, since the legislative audit was not released until February of this year. But that process was going on at the time that we were both developing our different recommendations. The Clean Water Council recommends less funding for technical assistance that the DNR and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture provide to local units of government that highlight project location and type and that demonstrate and enhance implementation activities that help people understand better about what are best management practices and where they most effectively can go. There's also a reduction that will lead to less information about compounds of emerging concern in our drinking water. The work that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Health does in this area is not duplicative. The agencies are concerned also that cuts in parts of the watershed approach cycle will impair our ability to effectively implement water quality projects and practices. So as you know, we're completing the third biennium of the 25-year constitutional amendment funding, where this is the recommendation for the fourth biennium. We're making progress in terms of meeting our long-term goals of protecting and restoring Minnesota's waters, but as you know, there's a lot yet to be done. Working together, our state agencies have developed a system-wide coordinated strategy to address water quality, and this coordinated approach helps ensure that complementary actions support broader strategies, that appropriate agencies are working toward their strengths, and that we are adequately identifying problems before taking steps to fix them. The agencies certainly work closely with the Clean Water Council. The council input is important in both of our processes, and we agree that their input in their focus on implementation is also important, as the agencies have also focused on that as well. The main differences between the governor's recommendations and the council recommendations are that there's a need for balance between the information and monitoring so that we can use that information in order to ready aim fire at where we need to do implementation practices rather than ready fire aim. We need that information. It's critical for us to know what we need to do and where and how to prioritize our actions. Agencies are bound to implement the law, for example, as I mentioned, in our RAPs. The level of funding in the council's recommendations is insufficient to enable agencies to comply with the law. The governor's recommendations are also responsive to new information in that regard. And I think going to Representative Hausman's analogy on the overflowing sink, I think it is correct that we're all concerned, I think, about mopping up and spending a lot of time mopping, but we need this information in order to, one, figure out where the faucet is, but also what's the best way to turn it off. So that I think that we need to be able to have our ongoing programs that are accelerating our actions on the ground reflect the work that we need to do to protect and restore our water resources and not spend so much time and effort mopping up as we are trying to do protection. We're happy to stand for questions.
Questions for Commissioner Flood. Commissioner, I have one. The governor's recommendations came out on January 27th, two or three weeks after he announced his buffer proposal, but yet you cut the Clean Water Council $3 million in the buffer proposal. It's one that where we use cooperation between Clean Water Council and LISARD SAMS for buffers. What was the governor's logic on that?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think what you'll see in the governor's supplemental budget is addressing that particular issue. So there's been some repurposed funds within the Clean Water Fund to help further support buffers, and we certainly have other folks here from the Department of Natural Resources and the Board of Water and Soil Resources that can also provide some additional information on that.
So, Commissioner Flood, are you saying he changed the $12 million to a different number? He does recommend more for this program now?
Can I notice that Commissioner Naramore has left the room, but maybe if Mr. Meyer or in terms of the specifics? Thank you.
Welcome back, Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the record. Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner. I can speak to what's in the supplemental budget related to the Clean Water Fund and the buffer initiative. Specifically, it's $5.65 million for the biennium for the DNR and the Board of Water and Soil Resources to implement the buffer initiative as it stands right now. Of that, $400,000 per year would be to the DNR for establishing and maintaining the inventory maps of all water requiring a riparian buffer and providing guidance to local units of government for the implementation of the new buffer requirements. We'll also be establishing and maintaining the inventory maps for each county that shows the waters that are subject to the buffer requirement. Following the initial phase in the period for compliance, the DNR will have responsibilities for issuing enforcement orders and following up on corrective actions in the current language. Additionally, there's $2.425 million per year to Bowser for grants to the local governments for program implementation. So the Soil Water Conservation Districts or their delegates would be required to implement the new buffer duties, new requirements. This funding would be to them directly. So it's 5.65 for the biennium or 2.825 approximately per year.
Okay, thank you. And Commissioner Meyer, he's not interested in changing his recommendation for the riparian buffer permanent conservation easement. The recommendation was $3 million less than the council's.
Mr. Chairman, not that I understand.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for Ms. Flood.
Okay. Commissioner Flood. Go ahead. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Flood, and maybe you addressed this, but as the conversation's been going on about water quality, and we had some of it here again today, it's being alluded to that after 25 years, we're not going to see much change with after spending $100 million a year. And I guess I'm asking you to be more direct in terms of what can we expect with changes. We're in 2015 now. If we continue the way we are, I know we've tried to have the wraps, and we're trying to talk about focusing on watersheds and trying to make sure we're able to implement practices, but how are we, are we going to make a significant impact with this massive investment?
Commissioner Flood.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I think there's several things I'll say as background to that. Minnesota has a lot of water. there are a lot of impacts, of course, that are and potential threats to water that also are we need to take into account. I think you're right that I don't think anybody necessarily anticipated that $100 million a year would correct every problem with water that we have in 25 years, and that certainly wasn't the conversation that at least started in 2006. I think it's a lot of money. It's more money than I think any other state in the United States has to address water quality and water resource issues. Statewide, we expect to see maybe 6 to 7% overall improvement within water bodies within the state if you compile all of that all together. There are other water bodies that, based on specific activities that we take, that we're going to be seeing much greater improvements in individual water bodies because of the actions that we take on the ground. But overall, if you kind of look at trying to average all of that across the state, it's certainly less than a lot. There's going to be cleaner water for Minnesota. It's not going to be everything is going to be clean.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess we've had some of this conversation today about the scale of the state and the scale of the topography and the scale of the landscape and the practices. And we're starting to hear more of we need more public support for this practice or that practice. And I think we've been willing to do that. We've been willing to provide public support, and we'll do so again. But I think maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, that it's not, money's not enough, that there have to be policy changes and changes in behavior and changes in practices, that we can't buy our way out of this by just providing additional millions each year.
Comment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I think you're absolutely right that we can't buy our way out of this problem unless I think the thing that is really going to fundamentally make change, if we keep doing the same thing as we've always done, we won't see improvements, because there are things like climate change, there is an increased population, there's continued land use change, all of those types of issues that we that threaten our water resources. So if there's going to be a larger scale change, it needs to be in the area of policy, because we can't buy our way out of this problem.
Thank you. Members, I'd like to move that. Thank you, Commissioner. See no other. Anybody want to speak for or against the bill? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Flood, I think I heard that under the funding structure as it is presented here, we cannot expect to maintain the 10-year cycle. Did I hear that correctly?
Commissioner Flood.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that's correct.
Representative Johnson.
And then a quick follow-up. What would it take to assure that we maintain that 10-year cycle? I think that's critical that we move forward with that.
Commissioner Flood.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what is contained within the governor's recommendation for monitoring and assessment and RAP development would maintain the 10-year cycle?
Thank you. Members, I'd like to move the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment you have is the one watershed, one plan, or one plan, one watershed. It is one, as we've discussed, as Commissioner Flood came forward and talked about differences between the governor and the Clean Water Council. It actually has the same recommendation from both, so it's not controversial in that respect. Originally, we weren't sure where this bill was going to go, but the funding is in this bill, so we want to put the policy in there. So this is the adoption of the bill that's already been heard in this committee. It's House File 17. I'm sorry. It was Representative Rarick's One Watershed, One Plan bill. Any discussion to that? All those in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The A1 is adopted. Representative Torkelson, you'd like to renew your motion that 1781 is being re-referred to legacy. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The amendment or the bill is passed and on to legacy. Members, we will be back next Tuesday. I want to remind everybody, the audience and the members, that tonight the Ducks Unlimited banquet is over at the former Kelly, the Capitol whatever it's actually called. I apologize to the new owners. They're getting in line a lot better, and that's good to see. But I strongly recommend you stop over there. It'll be a good time. The governor's State of the State is not until tomorrow, so we should be available to go there. So, members, with that, we're adjourned.